Ultimately, in the kingdom of Christ, we know that to call upon the name of the Lord, well, it still means to worship Him and to obey Him, but it is used in conjunction with when one becomes a member of the body of Christ through submission to immersion in water. And we see those words coming together, for instance, when the Apostle Paul is immersed and other examples like that. And there's more to be considered, much more to be considered on all of these things that we're skimming and looking at today. But we're going to look at a few more things. This time period of the patriarchal law, well, this begins with Genesis 3:21. It begins with the expulsion of Adam and Eve from the garden. So it continues all through the lifetime of Adam and Eve, and we know they lived a long time, and their descendants, it was in place there with Cain and Abel, which is why we see what we see in that chapter 4 of Genesis. It was there with Seth. It was there with Noah. All of the people on the earth, in fact, everyone on the earth, all the way forward, even to the time of Christ, with the exception of those people that were part of God's chosen nation, the certain special nation of people that He established, the Hebrew people, the Israelites, and He gave to them a law that was specific to them. But everyone else was under that law. And something that we see with this is, again, the very first words of the Bible, in the beginning, God. That was also something that applied to everyone. In fact, that was everyone's understanding. Can you show me any place in the Scripture from Genesis 1 and 1 forward until the Tower of Babel where you find any reference to any other God other than the one true God? It's not there. Now, God did not reveal His own personal special name to any human being until He did that with Moses there in the burning bush, when He revealed His name was Yehovah, Yahweh, Jehovah, the Lord, the self-existent and eternal, the I Am. That name was never revealed. Abraham knew Him as the Almighty, El Shaddai. But the Almighty. There weren't the Almighties. There was the Almighty. Now we can say, yes, well, Abraham was following the true God. So of course he would say that, yes, but that was the knowledge. There was not any other knowledge than that up until that point. The patriarchal law was a family system. It focused on animal sacrifice. The gospel was in promise in this, as in the words that are given to Abraham, in your seed, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. There is a plan that God has from the beginning whereby all of the nations are going to be blessed. Let's look at Genesis 11, the story of the Tower of Babel. We're going to look at this in light of our psalm that we had read. Thank you, Brother Sam, for reading Psalm 82. And we're going to also look at the Apostle Paul on Mars Hill that we see in Acts chapter 17 and connect some dots here with this. Genesis chapter 11. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words, and as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar or tar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people. And they have all one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do, and nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language so that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth. And they left off building the city. Therefore its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. So these people were living under that same system. And under that system, as near as we can determine, what was required of them was that they continue to do those things which were given to Adam and Eve, those things in their law, which were now altered. They were now impacted because sin was in the world. And so because of that, we had that picture represented in this animal sacrifice. And so the focal point of their worship to God was that animal sacrifice. And this was what they were supposed to do. And also what they were supposed to be doing is spreading over the face of the earth. Now, with this calling upon the name of the Lord, as people begin to spread over the face of the earth, well, they take with them whatever the concept of God, but only that God, with them. You know, so this is based on how well mom and dad teach Junior and how well Junior teaches the grandkids about this. And so we know that this can become affected and it can become problematic in the transmission of this knowledge. But what you get to by the time you have the Tower of Babel is you have this one man, Nimrod, and you can check him out with history. He's behind this whole plan to subvert the plan of God. We're not going to do that. We're going to do this instead. And God comes down and enforces his plan. But part of what we want to understand with looking at these things is that we want to know what goes where. What happens when? What applies to us? What doesn't apply to us? Where does God's law come down as being the thing here to do, but not over here? For instance, there was no Sabbath law given until it was delivered through Moses for the Israelite people. So all of those people before that, God was not requiring that of them. That was not part of that law. I know it's easy for us to infer it there, but a careful examination will show that it wasn't. And those are in the words that Moses gives to the Israelites in Deuteronomy 5, 1 through 7, Deuteronomy 5, 14 through 15. Our fathers didn't do this. This is something that the Lord gave for us to do. And we know because when it was given, it's given in conjunction with the instructions about the manna when they are complaining that they don't have any food and God causes the manna to come down. What does he tell them about gathering it on the Sabbath? You're not going to do that. What I'm going to do is the day before the Sabbath, I'm going to make twice as much come. But don't try to go out and gather on the Sabbath, because it's not going to be there. And sure enough, the first time that we're going to have this occur, the first Sabbath that we come to after this, we find people going out to test that out. So we know this was new to them. This was something just for them. This is an example of putting things where they go. There's other things that might be easier for us to get our heads around with this because we might talk about it more, like tithing, for instance. Tithing was income tax for the Israelite people. We're not given that same system. We're told to render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. We pay taxes to our local governments, locally and federally. Well, that is the Christian thing to do. But we're not part of the kingdom of Israel, and God is not asking us to tithe like he asked them. Does it help with your budgeting to think about laying aside this 10%? Well, yes, that can help you stay organized. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you examine what the Israelites did, that was only a portion of what they brought. All of the other requirements with all of their sacrifices and all their free will offerings, there was much more than 10% that could be given. That would represent a bare minimum, just like income tax. So there's a lot of things, knowing what goes where. This helps us when we talk to other people, because usually the confusion out there is going to be between what is the law under Christ and what was the law under Moses. And the problems that we encounter when we try to make those laws that were under Moses fit under the law of Christ. And then we get into all kinds of trouble there. And the world, the religious world, is confused. And this does all tie into what we're looking at with the Tower of Babel and Psalm 82 and some other thoughts here. The question was, was there any mention of any other gods before the Tower of Babel? And there weren't any other gods mentioned before the Tower of Babel. And so what is going on with that? What do we see happening with that? And I'm trying to find my spot in my notes here that I want to be attached to now as we proceed with this. Presently in our, Brother Paul mentioned the Bible study that we also do on Facebook Live. The schedule on Facebook Live, well, it has been 8 o'clock Sunday morning to read. We follow a programmed schedule of reading which the Pleasant Hill congregation puts out for the year. This year, it is a read through the New Testament 4 times. That's the plan. We read every quarter, we will have read through the New Testament. So that's what we're doing right now. And we start off that reading week on the Lord's Day, on Sunday morning. It's been suggested that maybe we should back that time up to 7 o'clock, which suits me fine, because usually I'm traveling somewhere, and that would be much better for me. And sometimes I have to change things around, and I'm not able to keep that commitment on a Sunday morning. So we sometimes do some doubling up. We read Sunday morning, and then we read Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. And then on Friday, what we do is we double up. We read the schedule for Friday, and we read the schedule for Saturday, so that we can have an hour for Bible study. And so some of what we're going to be looking at now is this phase of that Bible study that we are presently in. And these are the intended areas to cover in that Bible study. And we're going to touch on a few of these thoughts. First of all, this phrase, when the Most High divided their inheritance to the nation. Now, we noticed in Genesis 11, it says that he dispersed them, verse 8, from there over the face of all the earth. If we go over to the book of Acts, and we read in chapter 17, where we have Paul the Jew addressing a group of Gentiles, we read there in verse 26 and 27, and he made from one man every nation of mankind, quite an admission for a Jewish man in an audience of Gentiles to make in those days at that time. He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. Well, isn't that what we were just reading about in Genesis 11? Yes, it is. And he gives the purpose also in verse 27, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him, yet he is actually not far from each one of us. So the first point on this current phase of our Bible study that we're doing is when the Most High divided their inheritance to the nations. The phrase that we find in Deuteronomy 32, verse 8, cross-referencing to Psalm 82 that we had read this morning. And then all the peoples under the whole heavens, the phrase that we find in Deuteronomy 4, verses 19 and 20. All the peoples under the whole heavens, Deuteronomy 4, 19 and 20. And then looking at this phrase, sons of God, as it appears in some of these passages, like Deuteronomy 32, 8 and 9, in parallel with Deuteronomy 4, 19 and 20, that translation of the phrase sons of God is actually the best translation of this from the Hebrew. For instance, children of Israel isn't the best translation of that, which some of the English Bibles have, and it can be misleading to us. And then, as we looked at Acts 17, 26 and 27, the point that until the Tower of Babel, God wanted a relationship with all of humanity. And what we're going to spend a little bit of time here for a few minutes is looking at, well, what happened after the Tower of Babel? How did that picture change? Prior to that, God wanted a relationship with everyone. They were coming together and coming up with a plan that was against him. And then what happened after that? And then going from there, looking at all of the nations that were represented on the day of Pentecost in Acts 2, 9 through 11. And the phrase, like we see in Romans 1, 16, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. And looking at family distinctions, which became national distinctions and how they become of no consequence in the kingdom of Christ. Galatians 3, 28. And then from there, we begin to look exactly at what is the kingdom of Christ. And we begin to look at the church and how it is to be put together and how it is to function. So we're going to try to look at some of these points under the heading for this is the kingdom of Christ is for all. The kingdom of Christ is for all. And so we're going to start looking at some of these points here this morning. This phrase that we find in Deuteronomy 32, let's look at that. Deuteronomy 32, verse 8. This is the Song of Moses that we are reading here. This is a psalm that Moses taught the children of Israel. In 32 of Deuteronomy, verse 8, when the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God. Now, the when, I ascertain, is the Tower of Babel. This is when this began. And then we need to understand who these are that are being referenced. Well, we've talked about this directive from the beginning, Genesis 1, 28, that mankind, God wanted him to spread over all of the earth. That's what he told them to do. This is reiterated by God after the flood. He says exactly the same thing to Noah and his family in Genesis 9, verse 1. This is what I want you to do. I want you to spread over, I want you to fill the earth. And this is exactly what is flouted by mankind in Genesis 11, verse 4. No, we're not going to do that, is what they say. Subsequent generations after the flood were attempting to conform God to their terms. Still, though, only the one God in their minds, but they were trying.